Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today, we are to be talking about caregiving. What we're going to be talking about is, you know, that time when people say, I don't feel well, I need help, or that time when you say, I'm going because I want to go help my sister or my brother that needs some help, or I'm in the over 50 group and I'm saying, now I've got to take care of my younger kids. They're moving back in the house. Now I've got to take care of my elder parents and I just don't know what to do and I'm kind of getting squished. All of these topics we're going to be talking about today, because caregiving can be a very, very loving, comforting time of life. It can be a time of closure. It can be a time of bringing things full circle. They can also be a time of burnout. It can bring up resentment and anger. It can bring up all of those things that we've stored and we kind of kept to ourselves and we just didn't want anyone else to know about it. And all of a sudden, you know, you get sick and God help the person in front of you because you're just letting loose. And then further still, we think about nursing homes and assisted living. And so many times, you know, people that have lived very private lives and they've been just very, had great lives. You know, they had families, they had kids, they had great jobs and everything. And then all of a sudden they find themselves in these homes where they have no privacy. They don't know anyone. And their whole quality of life is totally changed. So today we're going to be talking about all of these topics. It will be a tough hour for many to listen to, because what I find is we have to be frank about it. We have to speak about what's going on, because if you are able to get the help that you can get, you may be able to have a little better quality of life and keep and hold on to as much of yourself as you possibly can. And really, that's very important. I've seen the other side where so many people were not taken care of well. I've seen very few people on the other side who were taken care of very well. So that's what we'll talk about today. My guest is Pamela Wilson. Her book is The Caregiving Trap, Solutions for Life's Unexpected Changes. And she is definitely an expert in the caregiving arena. Pamela, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Jeanette.
So, Pamela, don't you think there's so much that can happen at this time, don't you believe, when someone needs the word, they actually just verbalize the word, I need help, right?
Absolutely. Caregiving is, you know, it, as you mentioned before, it's a time of having great family relationships, but it's also this unexpected event that happens to people, and those that are thrust into the role of caregiving, if you've never done it before, sometimes you just don't even know what to do. So it can be very challenging.
And, you know, I think caregiving, if we look at it over the decades, has significantly changed. Number one, people are living longer. Number two, I've said on this radio show many times, the worst invention was the airplane, because it took people out of their communities, and no longer was there a community or your family members around the corner, next door, living upstairs or whatever, to help take care of each other through their lifespan. We don't have that anymore, you know, and you look at it, and so all of that's been broken down pretty much, and we look at the other years, now we have all this, you know, in the 50s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, maybe some parents hadn't taken care of their children so well or raised them really well, and, you know, they have a lot of resentment now, and now they have to take care of their elders, and they're going, this is not so cool. I think, you know, as we've always spoken on this show, is being very frank, is about all of these things are coming up because so many people are afraid to talk about it, and it kind of what keeps the care that they really need at behind the scenes, and they don't get what they need.
You're right, you know, and it's funny because both the parents don't want to talk about it sometimes, but then on the other hand, sometimes the children don't want to talk about it, and I can use my own family as an example. Before my parents passed away, there were times when my mom would say, gosh, I don't know what I'm going to do if your father passes away first. And she was wanting to talk about it. We as children were just like, oh, you know, don't worry, Mom, it'll be okay. And then there were times when she was being very practical. She actually had purchased a burial plan for she and my father. And she was very excited to tell me about it. And I was like, I don't want to know about that. And so my own personal experience with the death of my parents before I got into my current career was we didn't want to talk about it, and it was hard to talk about it. You know, nobody wants to talk about losing a loved one or death or anything like that, and so it's hard for families to even broach the subject these days.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like I said, over the decades, I think things have really started to change, where when you always had the care there, you didn't have to ask for it, you know, many decades ago. Now you actually have to ask for it, right?
You do. And a lot of times, though, interestingly enough, parents assume that their children are going to be the care providers. And like you say, if you have a son or daughter that's 2,000 miles away, they just can't show up. And so many times when parents say, oh, my children will take care of me, my first question to them is, have you asked them? Have you talked about this? Is it practical for them to get on a plane and fly 2,000 miles to come to you? And those are the discussions that we should be having, but we're not always having.
Yeah, that's a really tough one. And I think we've had many healthcare providers also on this show, emergency room doctors, who would talk about when someone is, an elder is in the emergency room, and, you know, they go, we go out, you know, I've done it myself. We go out, we look around to see where the family members are, and there aren't any, you know. Or there's a neighbor, or there's a new boyfriend, or whatever, that just kind of dropped you off, and you're looking, who's going to make the decisions for, you know, your patient?
Well, and not only who's going to make the decisions, but who has the information. My morning today was, I was at a doctor appointment for a gentleman for whom I'm power of attorney. He wouldn't been able to answer so many of the questions that the doctor were asking about his past history and tests and all of that. And so family members really do have to become an advocate, and it's important to have somebody attend those appointments with a loved one.
Yes, that's so vitally important. What I've always told so many elders is, if you've got important medical papers, the one thing and you need to do is you need to have them on the refrigerator. And they would look at me so quizzically. And I said, because that's where EMS goes. Because if EMS is taking you out of the house, they're always going to look at a refrigerator to find out, is there kids involved? Is there pictures of loved ones there? They'll grab those down. And if they see those papers there, that's where they'll take, because they're looking for drugs or information, and they'll just grab it. And I've seen that so many vitally times. You know, I've said to people, put that stuff on a magnet on your refrigerator, and because no one else would know.
No, no, they wouldn't. And so many times even, you know, I will tell people to carry their med list in their wallet.
Yeah.
You know, because let's say you're out driving around and EMS, you get into an accident, EMS has to show up. They may at least look in your wallet for your identification, find a medication list, find, you know, who do I call if there's an emergency. So a wallet is another place, if you're out and about, to put that information.
Yeah, I think the biggest misconception is that the new medical records is going to save you. It's going to be your rescuer. And I've said it many times, and I've gone through designing many of them, is that qualification that a doctor has to have, or a hospital or a facility, is they, quote, have to have them in place and working by a certain date. That was 2016. Except that just means that you have to have your name and your address, your patient number, and maybe one time when you were there, and that's it. It doesn't have to give any information. It just has to be a place marker, you know, and people don't realize that right now, you know, even myself, I had gone to the ER and I said, I want to look at my test results. He says, well, we won't have that up for the next 2 or 3 years online yet. And I said, so what's online? He says, your name and your patient number. I said, so it's a placeholder, right? He said, yeah. It's because that's all their compliance that they had to do. So it's really important for patients to not be under the assumption that everybody knows about your health when they really don't.
The other thing that I suggest to family members or even patients is when you go to the doctor and you leave, ask for a copy of your visit notes, because that will have your vitals, it'll have a med list, it'll have why you went there. And so at least if you keep track of all that information and a question comes up later, at least you'll have it, because isn't there like a 7-year hold on medical records, and after that they're pretty much destroyed?
Yeah, well, it depends on the state. Some states have 5 now. So if you had 5 years, they only keep them 4. And so if you really had some issues going on, you'll never, ever know about that.
Right. It's hard to find that history.
Yep, certainly is. So let's share a little bit about when we talk about caregiving, could you define the word for us? Because caregiving to some people says, well, caregiving to me is I'm going to, you know, take over some food. Or caregiving to me is I'm just going to make sure each day that I see her going out to get her mail. Or caregiving means if she needs something, I'm on call. And I think it's so different for almost everyone.
Caregiving is extremely difficult, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because there's different types of caregivers, even from family members to professional caregivers. So believe it or not, a banker could be a caregiver. And the example that I give is, you know, an older person comes in to cash checks. They see this person for years. All of a sudden, some stranger shows up with that older person. And I don't know about in New Orleans, but here in Colorado now, we have a elder law abuse reporting law, so that if a banker saw an elderly person come in and there was a stranger with them and they thought there was some abuse, they could report it. So you've got the professional caregivers like the bankers, the doctors, the nurses. But then as far as family goes, I always talk about roles. And in the hope that family members will say, well, yes, I can be the person that pays the bills. I can be the person that picks up the medications. I can be the person, like you said, that just goes and cleans house or just visits. So caregiving isn't the same for everybody, and we're not all good at all the different roles that caregiving involves.
You know, I know with my husband, he was living in California. This was in the 90s, living in California. And his parents lived here in New Orleans. And his father started to show signs of Alzheimer's. So he came back, and he was helping get things straightened out and all. And eventually he ended up having to take care of his father until they couldn't do it anymore. And then he and his mother had to put his father into a home. And his father cried and cried and cried because he didn't want to go there. Well, of course, he didn't last but a few weeks in there, and then he just died. And the mother, through this whole process, kept screaming that if this happens to me, you're not to let me go there. And his mother, within that year, also got Alzheimer's, and he took care of her in the home by himself for over 6 years. So really, when you look at it, that's very tough on some people, because it takes away your life, not only the person you're taken care of, but also your own life, too, because he lost his sense of who he was, what he was doing in his life, you know, in his, you know, 40s. And his whole life was turned upside down. And here he was caring and giving his mother a bath and taking care of her 24 hours a day for years on end. And for many, that is the life that they're leading. It's just that they're so afraid to let anybody know how they're feeling and what's going on in their home, because they don't want people to judge, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. And there's two components to that. And the first part is the promise. You know, promise me that you'll never put me in a home. Promise me that you'll never do this. I always talk about the fact in caregiving, you can't make those promises. My sister had promised to my mom, when you get sick, I'll come home, I'll take care of you. Well, my sister was living in Portland, Oregon, and she had a career. She couldn't leave that job to come home and take care of my mom. So that's the first aspect, is just talking about the promise and what's practical and what's not practical at the time. And then, like you say, caregivers mm-hmm. just get swept into this whirlwind of 24-hour care, and they do feel very guilty if they complain about it. So there's
right.
this, I call it this little secret club of caregivers who are stressed, they've given up their lives, some people give up their jobs to take care of parents, and they're scared to death to say, you know what, this is hard. I don't like this.
Yeah.
I'm not happy about this. I'm doing it, but it's really hard on me.
And they don't ask for help for themselves. And I've even seen instances where, in the case of taking care of someone else, the caregiver actually passes away before the person they're taking care of, because it just gets to be so monumentally overwhelming for them. They just simply can't do it anymore, and it took a toll on their own health.
Now, it does. And the story that I always tell, I don't know if you remember Christopher Reeve, Superman. So he
mm-hmm.
had a horseback riding accident and was really needed a lot of care. His wife gave up everything to take care of him, and 6 months after he passed away, she was diagnosed with lung cancer. Never
okay.
smoked a cigarette a day in her life, and within the year, she was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody relates that to caregiving. Nobody talks
yeah.
about that as it was stressful on her. And you're right, it is stressful on caregivers. Many times, the caregivers become more ill than the care recipient, the person they're taking care of.
Yeah, and it's a pretty tough thing, too, because you don't want to seem weak in the face of having to feel so strong for everybody around you.
You don't, but it's so important for caregivers to ask for help, and that is very hard for the caregivers who don't want to admit they can't do it all. Because I think that's where caregivers default to, is, you know, I can do this, I can take care of it, I can do it all. But the reality is that one person, if they're going to take care of themselves, really can't do it all.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about nursing homes, assisted living, and, you know, rehab, where I'll tell you, when someone really needs that type of help, they kind of get into a place by default. In other words, someone just writes something on the chart and they end up there. Whether or not it's the
yeah.
right place for them or not, it's rarely discussed. They just end up, like I always just say, it's just by default.
It is by default. And a lot of it is insurance company regulations. So let's say somebody breaks a hip and they have to go to rehab. That
yeah.
rehab is usually within their insurance network. So that's kind of the first limitation of I don't get to make a choice. And then
mm-hmm.
second, and you know this, a lot of the discharge planners have 8 hours to get somebody out of the hospital. So you know what? The
yeah.
first place that says, yeah, we have an open bed, that's where the person's going. And they don't discuss it with families.
Mm-hmm.
They don't give families options. So many times when we're helping families and I get a phone call and they'll say, okay, mom's getting discharged, what do we do? My first
mm-hmm.
question is, give me the insurance list and I'll rank three and I'll give you these, and, you know, these are the three that you want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps if you've got somebody in the area who's familiar with the communities.
You know, that's definitely true. And, you know, here's the one tip I've told so many people. Is if you get a call on Friday morning that they're discharging your mother on Friday morning, I always say to them, can't discharge her. So we don't have anybody there till Monday, and keep her there over the weekend, because then it gives you time. I always tell people, you don't want to be going into a hospital on a Friday and you don't want to get discharged from one on a Friday if all of your plans and your things aren't in place. So, and it's worked.
You're right.
Has worked in so many cases where, you know, they would send them home on a Friday, usually around 5 or 6, and they'll say, well, we don't have her oxygen. We don't have her, her walker isn't here. All of her medications, the list, they weren't, everything wasn't already ready for her and everything. And it ends up being Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of the next week before you can get things. So I always tell people, never leave a hospital or don't go in one on a Friday.
You're right. You are so right.
It's the craziest thing, isn't it, what we have to do? But I think just by the tips that you give and what I share, I really think is sometimes what people will say, oh, I heard that somewhere, and I really need to remember that. So really that's what our whole time today is about. It's about saying these are the little things that we've noticed and you may come across, don't you think?
Yes, and they're important, because one of the things that
mm-hmm.
you know, people don't aren't aware of is, you know, let's say you get into a hospital on Friday or you get discharged on the weekend to skilled nursing. The staffing on the weekend isn't the staff during the week, and half the time it's floater staff. So there's staff there that don't even know the patients or the charts and don't work there day in and day out.
And especially if you get 5 days of rehab and 2 days of that is a weekend, you can forget that. You're just going to be sitting there. And furthermore, you know, most of your meds aren't already online and stuff. You're not going to be evaluated. You're just going to be put into a bed till see you on Monday. So it's definitely something that we've always talked about. And the reason we talk about these little, what I call them, stumbling blocks is because if you hear of those and you say, that happened too, what we're sharing is how to get around them. And I think that's what's so vitally important.
Are you feeling despair or overwhelmed by your health or everyday life situations? Do you know what questions to ask and how to get help? Don't go it alone. Ask for help. Dr. Jeanette offers compassionate and comprehensive advocate support for health challenges. To download her free report, How to Get the Healthcare You Deserve, go to her website, www.drjeanettewellness.com. Anyone who downloads the information tonight will receive a complimentary 15-minute personal needs analysis consult with Dr. Gallagher for questions and answers. That website again for the free report download and free consult is www.drjeanettewellness.com. Just reach out and ask for help.
Can you share a little bit, how do you work as an advocate for in the legal system? Because a lot of people, I've had family members where a girl that I had gone to high school with ended up taking care of my grandmother at the end, and it was like, are you really kidding me, you know? And it turned out very negatively on every single front. And I've heard of, you know, people stealing from elders and everything. And it's where these people are sent by the courts or they're sent by the insurance plan and they end up in the homes and people say, I don't really know who's taking care of my family member. And they've really got power of attorney. And how did that happen?
So many times we act as a fiduciary in a number of roles, and so it's medical power of attorney, financial power of attorney, personal rep of estate, and that's after someone passes away. And then sometimes we're also appointed by the court to be someone's guardian. And so many times family members will come to us, and it will either be the parents or the children. Sometimes when it's the parents, they say, today we know we're healthy. We know tomorrow we may not be, and we're looking for power of attorney. We love our children. Mm-hmm. We don't want our children to have to make these medical decisions for us, and we don't want them dealing with our money. So in those cases, we become what we call a power of attorney in waiting. Then there are other people who need those services immediately, and so we will become that medical power of attorney or the financial power of attorney. And the way that we advocate in those situations is just to help the older adults understand what their medical concerns are, diagnosis. We go to doctor appointments and ask the questions that many times people are afraid to ask. Or sometimes they'll just feel stupid. You know, I think that's a stupid question. I'm afraid to ask it. And so we purposely ask those stupid questions to get the answers that, you know, we want and the answers that our client wants. And I think that area, and you've probably seen it too, but sometimes older people see their doctors as God. And it's like, well, you know, if the doctor tells me that, I must have to do it. And that's not always the case if you ask enough questions to find out why. Why would I have that procedure? What's the outcome? What's the benefit? And so, again, by being the advocate and asking those questions, many times we avoid unnecessary tests or we find out that a client needs more. You know, there should be other tests that are being done to diagnose whatever condition that we're looking at.
Yeah, I think so many times, as you said, that they really believe that the doctor is God, or the doctor is the all-knowing, or the doctor has everything under control, when really some doctors are just going by the EMR. When they put in the symptoms, it pops out a diagnosis, here's the testing, and there you go. Or some doctors will say, this is what I've always seen, and this is the way we're going to do it. Some other physicians will say, oh, gosh, I missed that. I wasn't paying attention or whatever. And unless someone brings it up or asks questions, many times I've said to people, you're not a victim of the healthcare system. You really need to be a participant in your health. You can't just walk in, lay yourself out on the table, say, fix me by tomorrow because I've got to go on a cruise, and expect life to work that way. Yet I would venture to say probably 99.9% of people do that. That's exactly how we've always done it. That's the way it's always been. And I think that number slowly has to start coming down, but really that's at a point where we're at now.
It is. And, you know, it's tough. I mean, the medical system, you know, now with all the changes and health insurance and everything, it's hard for family members just to even negotiate and advocate through that system.
Oh, yeah. Insurance is just a joy, isn't it?
You know? Yes, and it is.
It's pretty tough because, really, they're telling you what you have to do and they're not giving you a way around it.
And many times they're the prevention department is what I call it. You know, you need to get a test, but yet they want you to jump through so many hoops to get the test. Or, you know, the doctor didn't fill out the paperwork correctly, or you didn't do something right. And so, again, you're not only advocating with the doctors, but you're advocating with the insurance companies.
Yes, very much so. Or they'll say, we need a test done, and they'll give you a call, and you don't get a call, and months can go by, and you never get it. That's another factor, too. That happens quite often.
It does. Even with simple, you know, you go get lab work, and the doctor's supposed to call you about the test. And, again, this is kind of where our advocacy comes in. If we go to an appointment and there's supposed to be a follow-up appointment, we make sure it's set. If there's lab work, we make sure the lab work gets done, and we ask for the results. Because many times, you know, I've seen where they've gotten patients' lab work messed up. You know, and you get a call saying, oh, my God, you have this. And it's like, well, how did I get that? I've never had that before. And they check, and you got somebody else's test results back.
Yeah, they could pin anything into separate accounts, you know. And the doctor really, I mean, I've been with zillions of them. You know, all we do is you look down for the red or you look down for the H or the L. And if you don't see that there, you're just... You just swing a little line, and that's your signature, and you're on to the next stack, you know? So a lot of times you don't look at the name or the date or the time or the weight or all of these things that are so vitally important on those labs. You're just assuming that things have been taken care and followed through by which you've ordered it for.
Right, and of course, if something's wrong, somebody's going to call me and tell me, which doesn't always happen.
Oh, yeah, that waiting, yeah. And let's talk about neglect. I think neglect is pretty high up there. There was a report recently about the number one problem in nursing homes was really high incidence of kidney infections. And they said, oh, that's really high in the elderly, yet no one ever wants to discuss why that is. And that is so many reasons on so many levels. Number one, when they call, they have to use the bathroom. They've got to sit in their wheelchair. They've got to sit in their bed until someone comes and helps them. Number two, when they do come to help them, it might be, you know, an hour or two later and they forgot about them. Number three, you know, when you're older, you might just, you know, if you can't wait that long, you'll just go in your clothes and nobody ever comes to take care of you. And then it could be the next day till some of them have really even had their undergarments changed or their linens. And I've seen this repeatedly. And I'm sure you have also where, you know, the care of neglect in some instances is really you really need to have an all eyes on, and I think that's really where an advocate comes in, because if you're not able to go in and say, I think, I see, I sense that everything is on the up and up, we're good to go, really it's time to really investigate.
It is, you know, and that's true not only with skilled nursing communities, but also with assisted living. I think that families assume, well, you know, if I put my loved one into the care of this community, it's all going to be taken care of. And that is so far from the truth. And it's not, you know, I hate to say that places are purposely neglectful, but I can tell you that if nobody shows up, if family doesn't show up, if an advocate doesn't show up, that staff can say, well, you know what, nobody's going to come check. So, you know, if this slips by, who's going to know that it's slipping by? And so you're right, you do have to check and make sure that medications are giving, that people are changed, that their clothing is clean. You know, you were talking about kidney infections. The other big thing, especially in skilled nursing, is pneumonia. You know, a lot of older adults will get pneumonia, and believe it or not, a huge part of that is from poor dental conditions. So people not brushing their teeth, people swallowing bacteria that gets into the lungs. You know, dental care is so neglected in communities because a lot of times the older people forget, they don't want to do it, and that's another cause of concern.
And also, too, pneumonia is really high with aspiration. So if you're sitting in a chair or laying in a bed and you're at an odd angle and you're coughing or you're trying to eat or drink or take your medications, I mean, I've seen surgeries where the pouch is on the inside of your esophagus, you know, would just be loaded up with medications because they didn't go down. They just went into these pouches, and these people ended up with significant issues, you know, in their digestive systems. So, you know, or they are not even walking. If they might not even be walking at all, and that's where pneumonia comes. If you don't exercise or move your ribs, how do you expect your lungs to be able to, you know, transfer air? It's just so passive if you just sit still.
It is. And even, you know, people who, let's say they have lost all their teeth and they're supposed to be getting soft diets in nursing homes, they still, to your point, have to be sitting up when they eat. They have to have soft food. They have to be swallowing it. All of that contributes to pneumonia.
Yes, it's really tough, I'll tell you. And then now with the number one cancer being esophageal, it's just another actual they will say, oh, well, my food seems like it's coming back up because it never actually went down. And they end up giving them a lot of the, you know, the acid blockers, which further complicates, you know, problems down the lines. We will still start having other problems then.
So, well, and for families who see that, speech therapy, you know, ask questions. There are solutions. You know, there's speech therapy. There's a number of different kinds of therapies and treatments that can be done to make sure that people are swallowing appropriately. And to help with the swallowing reflex. So it's not just like this is the way it is. There's solutions.
At this time, we're going to take a short break because I'd like to share a product that I've been taking since December 2015, and I really feel the benefits every day. I'm sharing it because I really believe we need to start taking a few steps to improve our own health without waiting for someone to always tell us what to do. With heart and blood vessel complications these days, I really believe it's high on my list of what to take today. And so I hope you take a minute to check out the link following the Cardio Miracle information.
Attention all women over 50 who are feeling listless and tired. Are you constantly hitting a wall? Are your day-to-day activities wearing you out? We have great news. Take control of your health and empower your body with a new exclusive formula of vital nutrients and antioxidants. Our product, Cardio Miracle, is an alternative health option that can improve your general health and give you that much-needed natural energy so you can accomplish everything on your to-do list without feeling exhausted. Cardio Miracle can help you to have the energy and power you need to deal with all the lumps, bumps, and general chaos of life. It's called Cardio Miracle because it improves your heart health while giving you natural energy and important vitamins and nutrients your body craves. Statistics tell us women are at a high risk for a cardiac event. Please inform yourself as options are available. Discover more about this new product at cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette, spelled all in lowercase, DrJeanette. Thousands of women like yourself, including Dr. Jeanette, have blessed their bodies and their hearts with the restorative power of CardioMiracle. Learn more at CardioMiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette. That's CardioMiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette.
Absolutely. There are solutions, and that's why we've been bringing up a lot of these scenarios of what you and I both have seen, is so that people will say, it's something I need to look into, and it's definitely very important. Another thing here in our local area, which is quite disturbing, and probably many people at this point will say, I've just had enough of this, and I'm either going to do it or not going to do it, or I don't know what to do. But it's called about sexual abuse in the elder community. And not only does this occur, you know, in nursing homes or assisted living, but it also does occur at home. So really the idea, you know, you could look at your mother who might not be leaving the house at all, and a neighbor reports to you, well, there's a man that shows up at that house maybe once a week or so, and then you go and your mother's getting more and more agitated, or and she may have slight dementia, and you don't know, and people take advantage. And then also the idea of in dementia homes or assisted living, there's a lot of sexually active people in there who are really perpetrators, and they try to, I think, pay attention to it, the staff. But I've seen it quite often play out where you would go in. My husband had done some insurance, and it was for a burial insurance, and he was going to collect a payment. And the woman said, I have to lock my door. Let me know when you're coming, because all the men in here are perpetrators. And it's so disturbing on all fronts.
Well, it is. And a lot of times, you know, care staff, so there's a concern by caregivers and communities about reporting this. You know, it's all the liability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if I tell, you know, Mrs. Smith's husband that there's, you know, an issue with Mr. Smith? Am I violating HIPAA? Am I telling on another family
mm-hmm.
member? And so all of this sexual activity is, it is occurring, and there's great concerns about liability. You know, am I going to get in trouble if
mm-hmm.
I tell, you know, somebody that
right.
this is happening? So families should then be the proactive ones, saying, hey, you know, something weird is going on with my mom. Are there any residents here who might be causing a problem? So if the families start to pose the squeaky wheel and start asking the questions, I think care staff are more comfortable coming forward than having a care staff go to, you know, go to some gentleman and say, hey, you know, I think your wife is being bothered by this other gentleman here. Because
mm-hmm.
that opens up a whole can of worms.
And don't you also find when you go into homes, you see it also?
You see it everywhere. And the other, so let's
mm-hmm.
flip it. The other interesting thing in a lot of Alzheimer's communities that's
mm-hmm.
happening more often is, you know, when there is a spouse that is in the community and one
mm-hmm.
spouse is living in an Alzheimer's community, sometimes that person living in the community befriends another person. And it's
right.
almost like they become a couple. And that
mm-hmm.
affects the spouse out in the community. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes it causes great grief among families because it's like, well, gosh, mom is with this guy at the, you know, Alzheimer's community
mm-hmm.
and they're holding hands, but she's married to my dad. So
right.
just the negotiation of families dealing with the opposite of that, you know, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Do we stop it? Is it comforting for mom or dad? Can we live with it? Is it okay? That's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah, and in that instance, probably I would remove the person from the situation because they really, in that situation, don't have any control to be able to make those decisions. Yes, no? Here we find that if your mother is in an Alzheimer's unit and she befriends a male in the Alzheimer's unit, what does her husband, how does he handle that? And I will tell you, and probably this may or may not work for some people, but if that was my mother, I would remove her from the place. I would find one for women only. That's my thought. What are your thoughts?
You know, some families will do that, and other families, depending on the degree of the connection. So if it's as simple as my mom is holding hands with this other man, and I verified with staff that I know that it's not going beyond that, and they sit and watch TV together, you know, I might be able to say, you know, if that's a comfort for my mom, I'm okay with that. You know, I think it gets into a gray area if people are having, you know, more contact with that, and if it's sex, because it is difficult to know if somebody's able to give consent. And at that point, you know, many Alzheimer's communities will have separate, you know, separate units. So maybe the person is just transferred to a different unit where that person, the other person, doesn't live. You know, so there are times when you do have to intervene, and there's other times when, you know, if it's a simple thing, maybe you just say it's comforting and I'm okay with that.
Yes, it's a very tough place to be, but I'll tell you, it is not the time ever in any case that we've spoken about at all on this whole time today is for anyone to walk away. If you want or see, if you see something going on, you have got to speak up. And so many people will say, you know, it's my mother. I didn't care about it anyway. You know, she was a real pain in the you know what. She gets what she deserved to her. Or, hey, you know, what karma, what goes around comes around. I've heard people do all of these things. And I kind of said, you just can't walk away because it's another human being. Don't you believe that? I do.
I do believe that, regardless of whether you've had, and this comes up a lot too, a good relationship or a bad relationship with your parents, if you're the only one involved, you do have to be proactive and do something. And if you don't want to be the person that's proactive, then hire a care advocate and let that person, you know, be proactive. Because I can tell you, you know, I have worked with families, and the truth is not all families get along. Not all kids, you know, can care for their parents. So in the end, as long as somebody's getting the care and you feel like you can't do it, find somebody else to do it. You know, find somebody else to provide oversight. Find somebody else to provide the care. To your point, just don't ignore it. Don't let it go.
Yeah. And, you know, also, too, I have worked with clients who were women who were gay, and they felt that at their one of the women, she just knew that she was in a bad place. Her health was not being taken seriously. She was not being cared for in the home. She was always the one who did everything in the home. And now when she needed the help, the other person was kind of very minimally taking care. Like the other person would go into her room and read books all day and never come to help her or never fed her or took care of her or got her medications. And that's very tough to say, I want someone to take care of me, but I've always been the one that took care of them. And now you're depending on someone who can't give you what you need. And that's really what you and I are both saying is, step up and ask for help outside, move away, do something, get yourself in another better place. Because things, you cannot just go downhill and check out just because you're afraid to ask for help.
Well, and you can't. And the other aspect is the whole, I call it the caregiver, care recipient isolation. You know, where one caregiver says, you know, I'm the only person that can take care of mom. You know, nobody else can do it. And they stop allowing family to come visit, or they stop allowing friends to come visit because, you know, I can do this. Nobody else needs to be involved. Isolating the person who needs care and the caregiver isolating themselves is a huge red flag. It's a negative for both people. It's not good for either people. And so that's always a concern. You know, if you're a family member and your brother or sister is saying, you know, I got mom. Don't worry about it. Don't come visit.
Right.
That's a red flag.
You know, I think we, in life, we're born, we go to school, we have our families, we come into our careers and our power of ourselves, of who we are, what we can do, and how we've been able to affect change in our life and be able to just take care of everything and just be on top of the world, as we would say. And when we kind of turn the corner of 50 or 60, it kind of starts to reverse again. And it's a very tough place to be when you say physically, mentally, emotionally, I'm an adult just as well as at 80 as I was at 40, but there's some things I need help with, but yet you look at them and you say, oh, no, we're going to treat you as a child because that's how you're presenting. And a lot of people will say, you know, my caregivers, my gosh, you know, they want, sometimes in the beginning, they want to do everything for you, which it turns around is like, damn it, would you just let me get the can down myself, you know, and they want to do those little things to keep themselves still viable, you know, but it's always about, you know, here they had great control of their life in their 40s, and now they have no control over their lives.
And that's frustrating, and even the medical community sometimes supports that. So I'll take a client to a doctor appointment, and usually the doctor will look at me to answer a question. If my client can answer, I'm like, no, you need to ask them. Whatever they can't answer, I will tell you. So you know, so the system kind of ignores our elders too.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, it's tough because once you institute a drug in many cases, you really can't rely on what the patient is saying. You're therefore going to step over that and make your own decisions. If you're a medical professional or a caregiver or whatever, once you give that medication, that's it, cut off. Or once you get that diagnosis of dementia, you're finished. So really what you and I are both saying is be proactive, pay attention to your health, get things in order, take care of yourself how you can and the best you can, and have things set up when you're not able.
And fight for care, you know, really fight for care. I had a gentleman a few years ago who was 95 years old, and he went to the hospital. And the doctors were like, well, you know, he's 95. He's had a good life. And I said, yes, and I want him treated. You know, just because he's 95 doesn't mean he doesn't deserve medical care, treatment, and dignity. You've got to fight for your loved ones.
Yeah, that's incredible, isn't that, when they make the decisions? And it's a pretty tough place to be because depending upon where you are, I would say go to another facility in the area. But I do know of some people in some areas where they've gone to all the facilities already, and it turns out that the last one will say to them, well, you've been to all these facilities. It must be you that has the problem, not the facilities. And I would say, I so beg to differ. If you are feeling like it is not right, I'm sorry, it's not right. Just keep going. And I think that so many times people give up just short of the checkered flag.
Solution. Yes, they do. They do. And unfortunately, sometimes incorrect information gets put in medical charts. You know, you go to a skilled nursing and somebody says, oh, that person is difficult. Next time you need to go to a skilled nursing, they'll be like, oh, we saw those records. You're difficult. We're not going to take you.
Yeah.
You know, it's advocate, advocate, advocate.
And also, too, now let's, in closing, this is the last thing I probably want to talk about, is that sometimes when people get into these types of care, into these facilities, the elder will sit there and do nothing and be very stubborn or be very agitated or be very combative. And I look and I said, it's because in their home life, they had their own set ways, and now you're telling them they can't have that anymore. And they're combative because they feel disempowered. They feel less of a human. They feel put into a place where if they wanted to dance at 2 o'clock in the morning at home, they could do that all the way until they were 89 years old. But now that you've got them in a home, you get the answers, oh, well, we don't do that here. We can't expect that kind of behavior here. You have to fit into this paradigm. And that's very difficult for people because then they're drugged down because that's what they need to do to be able to comply.
It is, you know, it's well, guess what? It's Monday at 7 o'clock, and it's your shower time where you used to take showers at noon. You're right. It's the change in daily routine that gets frustrating for these older adults, and you do lose a lot of control when you're in a community. You know, it's the community schedule. It's not necessarily your schedule.
Yeah, so at all costs, I say to people, if you're able to get care into a home, that is the best place to be. I will tell you, when I was at the rehab hospital and giving elders, you put them in their wheelchair with no clothes on, wrapped up in a sheet, and you put them in the middle of the floor and squirt them down with a hose. That is the most disempowering thing I have ever had in my entire life. You know, they are not animals, they are human beings, and it is just, they say that's the way they do it here, and, you know, I'm telling you, it is just very difficult. So at all costs for people, have it be human, pay attention, do what you can, help others with dignity, speak up, and be able to do as much as you possibly can for anyone around you.
Yes.
It's a tough place, Pam. You know, we get older, we just want to say, gosh, you know, just let me, you know, like that commercial on TV, your heart attack is coming tomorrow at noon. You're like, no, I don't want a heart attack. If it's coming at noon, I'm out of here, right?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, the reality is we're all going to age and we're all going to get older. And hopefully, you know, somewhere along the way, we will have people who are going to take care of us and treat us right. That's all we can hope for.
Yeah, and we're all going to be going down the same road. For anyone to say, well, I don't have to do that, I know better, believe me, we're all going down the same road. It's just a matter of how many street signs we catch on the way. So
you're right,
you know.
You're right. It's just like the people who say to me, well, you know, that's not going to happen to me. I'm like, oh,
yes.
Yeah. Yes, it will.
Absolutely. Like, you know, like they think that they're going to avoid potholes. Come on, you know, it's just the way it is, right?
It is. It's life, and it's going to be all of our paths. We can't avoid it.
Well, goodness, Pam, it was such a pleasure to talk to you. I hope maybe in the future you'll come back on, because I think this topic is something that you can't stress it enough. We can't keep sharing enough. We can't keep giving tips enough, because so many people are in so many different places, just need to hear it 100 different ways to be able to say that they're going to be okay.
Well, and sometimes you need to hear it multiple times before you actually hear it, too. So, absolutely, I would
right.
love to join you again.
Well, Pam, thank you so much for joining us today. Could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you and also about your book, The Caregiving Trap?
Yes, so there are two websites. One is my company, which is thecarenavigator.com. And then the book information is at thecaregivingtrapbook.com. The book's available through all the major booksellers, online through Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Anywhere that you can purchase books online, you'll be able to find the book, The Caregiving Trap.
Well, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. And in closing, I think that just to be able to say we're going to do the best we can for others, and we sure hope that they're going to do for us too, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Pam, for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to find out more information about Pamela Wilson, again, her book is The Caregiving Trap, Solutions for Life's Unexpected Changes. And it's very important to note that everybody, we're all going to be down that same path sooner or later. It is just going to be, you're going to do the best you can and just do the best you can for those around you. Because I'll tell you, it's not karma. It's not, oh, I don't want to help them because they didn't help me. Or it's not that I'm just going to put them over there and just pay the check at, you know, every month. It's really about human beings, and you really need to step up and take care of humans. Thank you so much for joining us today. And until tomorrow, this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and have a great day. Good afternoon. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and thank you so much for joining us here today. For my group, Women Over Age 50, today we are talking to Pamela Wilson. Her book is The Caregiving Trap, Solutions for Life's Unexpected Changes. And it's definitely important to be able to say how you are going to be taken care of at end of life, how you take care of others and your elders, and also how you look at it and you say, how is this scenario going to be playing out in the last half of my life? Pamela, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. And to your point, Dr. Jeanette, the thing that I like to talk to women about is understand how caregiving affects you physically, emotionally, mentally, and financially most of all. Women are the natural caregivers. Women have children. They opt out of the workforce to take care of children. They take care of their parents. They take care of their spouse at the end of life. But nobody asks the question, who is going to take care of myself? Who is going to take care of the woman at the end of life? And
right.
So the questions that should be asked is, if I'm going to be the caregiver, will my husband buy long-term care insurance? Who's going to contribute to my retirement? And a lot of women are afraid to ask those questions, but they should be asking those questions because you know this more than anybody. At end of life, the number one population in nursing homes is women who don't have money to care for themselves and who are there on Medicaid. And that's a tragedy.
You know, it absolutely is, because really, a lot of times the children will just walk away because they're busier. They live farther away. The husbands may have already passed away. They may not have any siblings. And we also put into the factor of dementia and Alzheimer's, and it really at that time comes to be a point where who's going to take care of who, you know? And when, especially when we think about comfort care, you know, comfort care is that who's going to give me a hug? Who's going to brush my hair? Who's going to help me if I need to brush my teeth? Who's going to notice that my shoes don't fit anymore? And still further, who's going to notice that all my bras might be broken, or maybe that I need some new underwear? And really, that's about comfort care. And it's really especially for women, when we say at that time when we really need those comforts to feel like a woman, it really might not be there. So it's really very important. And what Pamela is saying is being able to take care of yourself along the way and start putting together some parameters for how you will be taken care of. Correct, Pam?
Absolutely. And dignity at end of life is so important. None of us want to end up in a nursing home alone with nobody to care for us. And by having those conversations earlier in life, we can make sure that that doesn't happen.
Well, I welcome everyone to check into Pam's book. It is The Caregiving Trap. And also to check out her website. Pam, would you share with our listeners your website for information?
Yes, so my company website is thecarenavigator.com, and the website for the book is thecaregivingtrapbook.com.
And also my website is mypersonaladvocate2.com. Download my free report at drjeanettewellness.com, or also go to the Facebook page, Women Over Age 50, to find out more information. And please do check out Pamela's information in our website, as we do have many tips that are going forward so people can say, you know, I never thought of that. I was afraid to talk about that. Or maybe I didn't have anyone that would listen to me when I was speaking. Pamela and I are both here for you. Ask either one of us. I'm sure we will be able to help you. If we're not, we can refer you to someone who can. There are many things Pamela can take care of. I'll be more than happy to connect you, and we'll be able to get what you need. So thank you so much, Pamela, for joining us today.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette.
And if you'd like to find out more information, please do check out our website. Again, thank you so much for being with us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.